everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing in life. Because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can go find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the good people at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. So had a great conversation with today's guest, Gunhild Øyehaug, who's a Norwegian author and does some interesting kind of experimental fiction. We had a fun conversation about her early ambition, about imagination, about reality. I really liked her, and it was a lot of fun to talk to her. She's, she is an award-winning Norwegian poet, like I said, essayist, fiction writer. Her story collection, Knots, was published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux in 2017, followed in 2018 by Wait, and then Blink, which was adapted into the acclaimed film Women in Oversized Men's Shirts. And in 2022, she had Present Tense Machine came out, and then her most recent is Evil Flowers. Evil Flowers, it's a lot of fun, very playful, very inventive, very smart, I think, in my opinion. And like I said, we had a great conversation, and I'm glad I get to share it with you. Enjoy. All right, live from Norway, it's Gunhild. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I chickened out trying to pronounce her last name. I'm working. Øyehaug. Yeah. Øyehaug, yes.
Perfect.
That's it's pretty good. Okay. So listen, congrats. We're here because your fourth book drops today. Well, this is being posted on the 14th on Valentine's Day. Fourth book in America, Evil Flowers. Very interesting collection of short stories. We're going to get to that in a moment, but congratulations. I hope you're pleased with this.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very pleased. I'm very thrilled, really.
Good. Good. Well, you should be. Of course, this is translated. You write in Norwegian only. You speak beautiful English, but you write in Norwegian.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting to me, the translation thing, but let's back up. So, this is book number four, short stories, essays. You teach creative writing. Is that still the case? Mm-hmm. So it seems like our listeners can't see it, but there's a wall of gorgeous books behind her.
Yeah.
A life of books. Was it always reading and writing? Was that the plan from just the earliest age, or did this descend on you in college or something? How did this all start?
No, it started very, very early.
Feel that off of you. I'm just looking at you and I'm seeing a girl 5 years old in her bed with a book. Is this right?
It's pretty accurate, yes. I learned to read when I was four, and I can still remember that feeling of learning how to read. My parents would read to us every night. We were reading, I'm not sure what the comic is called in America. It's the Disney Donald Duck.
Yes. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You were reading Donald Duck in Norway. Oh, the reach of Disney is great. Okay.
So I remember lying in bed with my mother or my father, and I was looking up into the comic page, and I could see a letter, and I suddenly realized this is an E, isn't it?
Wow. And you can remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that feeling of suddenly understanding a letter and what it sounded like, and then suddenly being able to kind of put the words together and to read. So and then I started to write a dictionary. Not a dictionary. I wish I was writing a dictionary, a diary when I was six. So I still have these little texts. And I was writing about very, very, day-to-day things, like my uncle is carrying a big box full of stuff. Or today I learned how to ride a bike. It's very difficult to get my feet on the pedals.
Wow.
So I have, and that's just so wonderful to be able to go back and to remember those things, but I wouldn't have remembered them if I hadn't written them down. I don't think I would have remembered, the trouble of getting your foot on the pedal, but because I can remember that now. So, and then also, both my parents were teachers. They're both retired now, but and they were teachers in Norwegian, and also my mother taught English and my father taught French. So language has always been a very
Wow.
major
How
part
many
of my upbringing.
languages do you speak?
Well, I speak Norwegian and I speak English, well, as good as I can, and I can understand some French and German,
Okay.
and of course the other Scandinavian languages, except from Icelandic, which is still very close to the Norse.
How many Norwegian languages are there?
Well, there are two official Norwegian languages, written languages, that is, and I'm writing the minority language called New Norwegian.
I
So
didn't
there's
even
a
know that. How come I thought there was, Norway's a good sized country, but it's not like India where it's huge and there's, billion people there. So I would think one language would be enough.
Yeah, no, because we were a Danish colony for 300 years. So when that period ended, there was a very strong movement to kind of try to discover or rekindle what had been the Norwegian written language, and that kind of resulted into the or created the language that I'm writing in now, which is called New Norwegian, and it's about 25%. Or maybe a little bit less of the population who writes which writes a new Norwegian. So
See,
yeah.
now I would think from a marketing standpoint, you'd want to go with the old Norwegian because more people, but is everybody fluent in both?
Yeah, you have to learn both languages in school. So, and they're
Okay.
quite similar. It's not like you don't understand each other at
Gotcha.
all, but but I think we have some people would claim that the new Norwegian is actually the old Norwegian, so it's but it, I think it's a mix, and I think
All
it's
right.
and I think language is a very beautiful thing. I think I think it's a kind of that it's a richness to have many written languages, and
It
that I
is.
think it is a possibility to kind of cre to express yourself in different ways, I think. So
It's evolutionary too, the nat I mean, English is such an ex perfect example. America is a classic melting pot. We have so many people from so, but the English language that we use is totally a blend of just everything. I mean, of French and even Yiddish and Scandinavian, tons of Scandinavian in there, and of course Latin. And anyway, so I
yeah.
think, and it just keeps changing and evolving. So I think it's fascinating in that way. So okay, so your kid, you're reading, your parents, you're smart, you're bookish family. People are speaking in full sentences. Everyone's reading. That's that's one kind of life. Not everybody comes from that, but that's where you came from. But being loving to read is one thing. Writing is something else. In America, there's a famous American short story writer named oh God dang it, she's a Southern writer who wrote. Now I'm blanking on her name. It'll come to me. But she said everyone knows what a story is until they try to write one. Flannery O'Connor.
Yeah, I was
Flannery
just going
O'Connor.
to say
Flannery O'Connor. Okay, so, but how early did you start saying, I'm going to write a story, like
Yeah.
fiction, actually?
Well, I think I was probably in my teens. But I wrote poetry before that, or I don't really know if I would call it poetry. That sounds a little bit too fancy for what it was.
Well, but it was not,
But it
was there,
was
were there
poems.
verses?
Yeah, no, but
Okay.
I remember I was very jealous with my cousin. I grew up with like 16 cousins as my
Oh,
next door neighbors. So,
wow.
and one of them was my age, and she started school before me, and she would come home with her homework, and it would say like nice work at the end of the page, and I was very jealous of that. So I just wanted someone to praise my work. So I would write little poems, and I would end them with nice poem.
You would write that?
Yeah. So I have these little posts, which is a comment from my own, like a fictitious teacher who has commented on my
Wow.
poem. So I think I just became a writer because I was praising myself so much that I kind of acquired a self-confidence in writing.
That's interesting. So your first impulse was to see, I just was teaching a class where I was saying you've got to, it's hard not to, but to not seek validation from publication because it's so tempting. It's and I in a way, whether I wanted to or not, I was looking for it. And when I finally got it, I was like, I could have given myself this at any time. I did not need to wait for it. And you were giving it to yourself as a teenager. Good job. All right. As a kid.
But then when I was a teenager, we were allowed to write short stories in school. So that was so there was a I think there's been a maybe a decade where young students or pupils weren't allowed to write short stories because they were so difficult to judge.
Right.
And a grade. But when I was young, that was still allowed, and I really, really liked that. And I was very inspired by the short stories that we read in school. But my decision to become a writer came before that, I think. I was just it just seemed like the one thing that I wanted to do. And the one thing that I felt that I had some talent for doing.
How do you, how do you, I'm going to look, how do you identify in yourself that you have talent? Because one thing when other people tell you, and that's sometimes unfortunately the way we decide, but how do you decide for yourself that you have what we call talent?
Well, I'm not sure if I would say that I knew that I had talent for it, but I knew that it was an incredibly strong desire to do it. I think it's more that than just to kind of but I did have some very, very huge thoughts on myself as well. I thought that I would be like I mean I imagined that I would might have my first book out when I was 16, and then the newspaper would say, "Oh, we've had Ibsen, the Norwegian playwright." And we've had Bjørnson, which was the other great Norwegian writer at the time. But now we have
Boy.
Gunhild Øyehaug, and then it would be my age, like 16, in the
Wow, you were
parentheses.
all right. So you know, so I want to actually I would love to actually put a pin on this for our listeners, because I wrote a whole book about talent because I'm suspicious of that word. But I do think that what we really mean is just what you said, which is desire, which is that you identify it and it's what I think drives curiosity. One way to think of it, see what you think of this, is that when you lay your attention on something, there's no effort required. In other words, you are drawn to it sort of as you would magnetically, the way you're someone you're attracted to, whether it's an idea. And that is what allows what we call talent to flourish. Does that make sense? In other words, an expression of the sort of inherent curiosity, interest.
Absolutely. I think that describes perfectly. And then you combine it with that superhuman belief in the possibilities that you still have when you're young, and that's becomes a very potent and well strong driving force until you hit the wall, and then you have to try to figure out what to do after
What's
that.
the wall? Tell me about the wall, because we all hit it. Listen, you're not a,
Well,
you're still a young person in the world of writers, if you, as you know, but we all hit the wall. So tell me about your wall. What was it like when you hit it, and when did you hit it?
actually didn't hit the wall until after I'd published my first book.
Okay.
And that was and I was trying to write my second.
And was it a collection of short stories? Was your first book a collection of
No,
short
my
stories?
first book is actually 25 years ago, when I was 23, and it was my
Oh my God, I don't know who I'm looking at. Okay, all
no.
right, I'm totally confused.
Oh, it's I was it was a collection of poems. It was called let's see, Slave of the Blueberry was the title.
Okay.
And I think that went very well. It was a kind of a shock to me that I would write poetry because I'd been writing short stories and had kind of
Right.
imagined that I had even started a short story collection before I wrote the poems. But then after I wrote the poetry collection, I think I wrote two more, which was which was not, I don't know how to say this in English. They were kind of let down by my publisher. They didn't want them.
Okay.
And that was just, that led me into this huge, oh.
Right. Okay, so that was a big one. You publish something, it's a poetry collection, so it's the rare po first time debut poetry collection that's going to make the bestseller list, let's say, right? So then the next thing your publisher said, we call it rejected.
You're
It's one of
rejected. Thank you.
the,
You know,
yeah, that's,
sometimes
you
like
know,
English
don't even
words are
learn
just
that word. Don't even learn that English word.
I was rejected.
Yeah, that's
No, but I
right.
was. And also and I was at that time I was studying comparative literature at the university.
Okay.
And I had found a Finnish Swedish poet called Tua Forsström, which I really, really, really loved. I still do. And I was trying to write the way I kind of looked at, I thought she was writing. I was trying to transform into a different kind of writer.
Right.
And that was really a big failure. And
Yeah.
I was trying to write as this new idol for 2 or 3 years, I think, before I finally realized that this isn't me. I wasn't, I'm much too, I mean, I like different things. I mean, I think I was trying to be someone I wasn't.
Yeah.
So it took quite a long time before I realized that, and that I had to kind of just go back to the writer that I had been or wanted to be, and not try to be Tua Forsström, which is really well, I shouldn't have been stupid enough to try,
No,
even
but
when
you know what?
it
It's
was.
a subtle thing that can happen, and it reminds me of, you know, I tried to be a fiction. I write narrative nonfiction, but I tried to be a fiction writer for years, and it was not a crazy idea. I loved fiction for a time, and I was very influenced by it, and it seemed like the best fit, but it really wasn't the perfect fit. And it makes a certain sense to read someone and be really inspired by them, and just not notice that instead of using the inspiration to create your own thing, you're just slipping to slightly to the one side and imitating. And it can be so close that you can, and you are still a young writer, really, in the grand scheme of things. It's an understandable mistake to make. But here's what I think the benefit of is. You learned experientially the futility of it, right? Because nothing teaches you like walking that in those shoes for a few miles to know how painful they can be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's also for me it was a very important experience to have when also when I'm teaching writing, because
Yeah.
I can identify it when I see it when my students are kind of walking in the wrong direction. I'm it's easier for me to say that
Yeah.
I've done the same, and it's that I don't think you should try to go back to what you really want.
Yeah.
So
Good for
it's
you. Well, so this brings me to my next point. So Evil Flowers is a very playful, I want to use that word. I don't know if you are comfortable with that, but I think the stories are playful in that they're very sort of surreal and experimental. And I do think that that takes a certain courage to not tell a traditional, to make just a more traditional beginning, middle, and end story. Take some different, do a lot of experimentation with point of view and with just reality and so on. And I would think that people who write these kinds of stories come to it in one of two ways. And I hope yours is the second. The first is just, I got to do something different that is different than anybody else is doing because I'll get a lot of attention and I want to be cool and different. And I've seen plenty of that, you know. And then the other one is, this is just how my mind forms story. I get the sense that it's the latter. Is that fair?
yeah, that's absolutely fair. Yeah.
And when did you start realizing this is the kind of story I want to write? And were you comfortable with it? Or did you think, God, this is so cool, everybody's going to think it's cool because I think it's cool. Like, talk to me about how that understanding that this is the kind of story you wanted to tell.
Well, I think when with this collection, I was really well, it's a huge discussion. I don't really know where to start, but I think I mean I could start by saying that I'm very interested in the narrating, the narrator,
The narrator, yeah.
yeah, the narrator, and the possibility that and how the voice comes into being, and what a voice is, and then and I would like to question the need for a psychologically coherent or identifiable or believable solid
Right.
point of view.
Yeah,
So
right.
it's kind of, I think that's probably the answer behind the I'm searching for the word,
Do you
which
think now I've
yeah
asked a question, now I'm going to interrupt you just because
yeah
I'm so
yeah
interested in
that's
the,
fine.
but do you think that in a way, like I was super interested in stream of consciousness writing when I was in my formative years, Faulkner and Joyce particular in America, right? But 'cause I felt they captured a nature of reality that I didn't sense sometimes in traditional narrative. Because I felt like, God, the way the mind works is such a part of my reality. Do you feel that the surreality of your stories is an attempt to sort of capture the way you actually experience reality in a kind of lived sense? Is that not to get too academic, but that's always feeling, I feel like when people experiment, they're looking for another way to capture the way they actually feel in reality.
Yeah, well,
Does that
that's a
make
very
sense?
good. Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes I read, sometimes people are reviewing these texts, and I mean, a common reaction is that this is somehow related to drugs. That this is like, oh, this is an acid version of
Right.
something. And
Yeah.
I've never taken drugs in my entire life. It's not the way I would describe it at all. It has nothing to do with drugs, but it is what you said. It's a way of describing a reality. And I often think of, I have said, you know, I think to provoke some readers or critics, I've said that I'm writing everyday realism, because that's really what it is. And I also try to mix what is very surreal with something that is incredibly mundane
Oh, absolutely.
boring and
Yeah.
very not very exciting at all. So it's kind of that mix of the super or surreal and the very, very real,
You know
which
what it
is
reminds me
interesting
of
to me.
is the way they talked about, especially in the 60s, when people were doing, like the Beatles were experimenting with music, and everyone assumed it all has to be based on drugs. And I just thought that is the point of view of someone who has never made anything. Like if you actually start creating things, the mind, you don't, is going to go where it's going to go, and you don't need drugs for that. Like you,
No.
I mean, drugs, you can do it on drugs, but you really don't know, you just don't need it for it. It's an expression of someone who doesn't experientially understand creativity. I just, I don't mean
Yeah,
to be too hard on them, but I don't think if they'd ever really made anything, they would say that. I don't think.
I agree, and I think also the need to constantly interpret symbols.
Oh.
Sometimes they're just, you know, physical facts. You know, I have a short
Right.
story in my first collection of stories, which is called Knots, where there's a love story between aliens, and they are communicating by Polaroids that are slitting out of their heads, so they can just pick down on Polaroid. And there's one very stupid little scene where there are one alien has had an affair with another one, and the hurt alien is trying to question, and she's pulling out a Polaroid with a question mark, which is just a really, really stupid way. And when you first had aliens, you mean they could have maybe communicated in something a bit more grand or not so mundane as Polaroids. But then, that's just, I mean, that's just Polaroids.
Well, also,
But it is, but I do understand. I mean, it is an image of communication. Of course it is, but it's, you know.
the whole symbolism thing, because I remember sitting in college courses and they were talking about, and I was a really a writer first and foremost. And I wasn't an academic, but I could jibe with academia. But they were talking about the art in a certain way. And I was like, and I hadn't thought about it much, but I'm like, I don't think artists, they don't know what you think they know about their own work. Most of the times we don't know what the next sentence is going to be. We don't know. And when it comes together, it feels kind of magical. And we may go back and reconfigure things, but we're as mystified and delighted by it as anybody else. And to sort of think we put all these symbols in, I think if you do that, it's intellectual and it kind of kills it if they wrote the way an academic thinks the story is constructed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's but that's also the I think that's one of the most exhilarating things about writing is that you really don't know when
Yes.
you're just acting on some kind of weird instinct, and then
Yes.
in the end you can when you reread it and you can see, oh, that's when when the editing process starts, and
Yeah.
then you can try to highlight or just erase what is not
Yep.
necessary, and and you suddenly understand what you've been writing, and then you can kind of build on that and write new stuff based on what you realized that you had been doing all along. But it's a very strange and mystical or mysterious process, I think.
You can say mystical. You can say mystical because I always say, like, you know how you can't tickle yourself? You know, like someone else has to do it for you to laugh, like you just can't do it. Well, you shouldn't be able to surprise yourself. In other words, it should have to come from the outside. And yet, when you write, you are frequently surprised in a way by what comes.
Yeah, but that's language. That's the idea of language, because it's because when you enter I'm sorry, the phrase language, you're kind of entering something that is already there, which is
Right, right.
and it's and I mean words, I mean that happens to me all the time. I'm writing a sentence and I think I have some kind of idea where I'm going, and then suddenly I put in the word twilight, for instance,
Right.
and then suddenly that kind of bounces off with something else,
That's
and
right.
then it takes a completely different direction. And every word has some kind of not just some kind, but a lot of baggage or
Yep.
luggage. I think I
No
mean
ba luggage, not baggage. Baggage
that.
in the English, baggage mean is a negative connotation. It's like it's heavy and it's unwanted.
Okay, let's just go with
Luggage.
luggage.
Okay.
I'm just seeing these little suitcases coming down.
Yeah, okay. Luggage, yeah, that's
They do,
good.
but they do they, and then that's what the interplay of the words themselves is something that you just start, and it's kind of unfolding in front of you, and that's it sounds like a cliche, but for me that's true. I mean, the language actually takes over, so.
Good. And speaking of language, I've never had the experience. Maybe someday I will, but since you're fluent in English as well as Norwegian, have you picked up the translations just to see how, like, because so you didn't do the translation, somebody else did that. And so, like, what's that like? Because obviously it's in some way it's going to be different, a little bit of a different story, right?
Yeah, but I've Kari Dixon, who is my brilliant translator, we have kind of cooperation going when she is translating the stories. So she will send me the stories while she is working on
Oh,
them,
she
and I
will.
will,
Okay.
yeah, so I have read them long before they have been published, and so we revise them. I think
Okay.
we work on, we have one short story which is sent back and forth between us maybe three times, and with corrections and
Right.
suggestions, and
Right.
so it's just a it's a matter of well, I have the opportunity to kind of to read and comment, and I'm c incredibly grateful for that, because English is the only language I think I could do that with,
Right.
except for the Nordic languages.
Right. And so do you ever, so, okay, so you send it back and forth and you're trying to get the translation to capture what you'd said in Norwegian. And of course, language is so subtle. And if you love language, it's the subtlety you love, right? That's where you're looking for. Have you ever finished a translation of a story and something else was the revealed in the translation? In other words, it just went somewhere slightly different that you found a little more interesting and you wish you could go back the Norwegian and tweak it to match what you found in the translation. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, that's happened, and sometimes I just I think, for instance, I remember very well. My original sentence was, it's about a very unhappy deer who is standing at the edge of a forest and wishing he was an elk, and then and he is and he is I think my original sentence was, I felt, as in the first person narrator, the deer, I wish I was something else. Right now I feel trapped in a deer pattern. And then Kari, my translator, would translate this into, I feel I'm trapped in deerness. And I just loved that. So that
Is
was
there a
just
word? Is there a
subliminal.
d does dearness? Is there a Norwegian version of that from deer?
No, not
No,
really.
yeah,
It would have been very clumsy, I think, if you would do.
yeah.
I think you can do something similar, but it wouldn't have been so elegant as when Kari translated it. So that's just an example of something I think worked even better, much better than in English. So
that's
and but
fascinating.
also I think and I think it's very great to see when Kaede translates the text, because I recognize her. She's got a very dynamic style. So it is Kaede's style, which is has met mine, which is
Right.
sometimes a bit more perhaps in some of my short stories a bit more academic, kind of with a twist, but with her dynamic and very fun language, I think it's I think it's a very good meeting point between those two
Excellent.
modes. Mm.
Well, that is so interesting. That is so interesting. Well, these are our tools. Language is our tool. It's dynamic, it's ever changing, and it's alive. We can invent words if we want, which some of us do. All right. So this is, so like I said, this comes out, this is dropping on February 14th. And this is when you can, where all fine books are sold, people. I assume you're hard at work on another project.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, don't say anything about it. Don't say.
No, I never talk about it because then it'll just die, I think.
Yes, it will. I tell my son this. He wants to write, but his mistake is he tells me about his stories. I'm like, don't tell me.
No.
Don't tell me. You're not going to. Now it feels like you've written it. You don't need to write it anymore.
No.
All right. So, well, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a lot of fun, but I'm not quite done with you. Go ahead. I got one more question. I'd like you to finish this sentence. I want you to think about all the writing you've done, even in your diary when you were 6 years old. All the writing you've done, if it's taught you anything, it's taught you what?
Oh, my goodness. Complete silence. No, I don't. I really don't know. I don't know what it's taught me. No,
nothing's coming. Hasn't it taught you something? Look, I'm going to help you answer it, just because I feel
you.
Like, and no, because when you talked about the discovery, don't you think you have to be? Because look, here's someone maybe who has been identified in her life as smart. People have probably called you that. Whether you accepted that description or not, I'm sure you got pretty good grades when you were a kid in school and all that. Maybe you didn't, but I suspect you did. But when you're writing, if you want to discover, which is the only fun there is, I mean, it's where most of the fun is, you have to get comfortable not knowing. Because if you don't, the way to discover, if you don't, so don't you have, and but the smart kids in school know the answers. And yet as a writer, you have to not know the answer.
Yeah, well, thank you. That's a very
How's
good.
That? How's that? Is that a good?
I accept. Yeah, that's exactly. That's what I would have said.
Good. Well, I think I think you were pointing towards it, but I think it's a critical thing to, we all have to learn, right? To really get comfortable with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to actually be stupid.
In a way, right. Yeah. Let's call it innocent. Let's call it innocent.
Or even open.
Yes, even better.
Questioning and interested.
Yes, even better.
Yeah.
Good, Al, you're all right. You keep writing those stories. You keep making them realistic by your own definition of that word.
I will, thank you.
Okay, good talking to you.
And good talking to you too.
Oh, poor woman. I think she could have come up with that answer on her own. I really do. But sometimes, you know, you get these questions and you feel a bit like a deer in the headlights. You want to say something smart. That was a lot of fun. Translation. Interesting. Surprise. Don't presume anything. Yeah. It's all good stuff. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries. Thank you, my friend. And to all of you out there, you know, be surprised. Be delighted. Don't predict. Don't plan it. Just follow your guts, find something you love to do, and do it.